Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
What say you, Richard Ellett Murdoch? Are you guilty or not guilty of the felonies wherein you stand indicted?
Not guilty.
How shall you be tried?
By God and my country.
The exact time when Paul and Maggie Murdoch were murdered.
At the end of the investigation, it was obvious.
I'm not here to work with them. Okay?
And the whole point is to have this not fall into the wrong hands. This case is unique, it's unprecedented in South Carolina history.
Mr. Griffin introduced the relationship between the defendant and Eddie Smith. The court conducted a pretrial, a hearing outside the presence of the jury, addressed the issue, made it clear that the roadside shooting was a bridge too far. Then the defense decided to build a road over that bridge, decided to just go right there as if they could dance through fire without getting burned, scarred, or anything. The door was open.
Welcome to Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdoch Murders, Money, and Mystery. I'm Ann Emerson. I'm an investigative reporter for WCIV. With me is our exclusive legal analyst, South Carolina's former Attorney General Charlie Condon. We have our executive producer, Drew Tripp. Manning the boards is Max Harrison, our chief photographer. We want to go straight into what happened today with this roadside shooting being allowed into court. What we just heard was Judge Newman's eloquent way of telling us that indeed he is going to allow, after several moments of kind of going back and forth about whether or not this Labor Day botched suicide, assisted suicide attempt would be allowed into court, this roadside shooting that played heavily into the prosecution's case, it looks like. So, Charlie, talk to me about why Newman believes this roadside shooting is fair game now.
Continuing evidence why there should be a Judge Newman fan club. I mean, his language in explaining his ruling, wow, that it was a bridge too far when you moved to exclude it, and I granted your motion. Now you're building a road over that bridge. You didn't think you could get burnt by what's on the other side of the bridge, presumably, and I'm, in effect, going to burn you if the state wants to. And what Judge Newman ruled was you've opened the door, you threw out Eddie Smith there as a possible suspect in this case, and you also put in the drug relationship. So he also made it very clear in his ruling that he's relying upon fairness. I think he used the word fairness and completeness for the state to be able to get into this. So I think there's a pivot here. It's not only for motive evidence, but it's also to get into the relationship for the state to be able to exclude Eddie Smith as a suspect. And that's exactly what Agent Kelly did on his last question. He said there was no evidence linking Eddie Smith to the murders of Maggie and Paul. He made a very flat, strong statement on that. Of course, he's not been cross-examined yet by Attorney Hart Pudling. That'll be an hour and a half tomorrow. That's what he told me. So, major development.
Major development. Now, let's talk a little bit about what this meant for today. This basically meant that SLED agent Ryan Kelly came on board and went up to the stand, basically talked about how he got a call from Dick Harpootley and Jim Griffin from rehab with Alec. This was after Alec had already done a sketch of someone who he said looked like the man who had shot him on the side of the road over Labor Day, he had gone to great lengths to talk about how someone had come up to him while he was trying to change his tire on the side of the road. And then can we talk about why we think he decided to make that call to SLED? Basically, what did we hear, Drew, today about why Alec Murdoch decided he needed to come clean?
Well, to hear him tell it, it was simply coming down off of drugs. That was one of the reasons he gave. And I think also there may have been pressure on him from his family a little bit, because they knew something was going on. If you missed the testimony today, it was essentially that Randy Murdoch, Alec's brother, was witnessing and hearing about some peculiar things going on, strange things going on in the aftermath of this shooting with respect to Alec in the hospital. He was basically bribing nurses to let him use their phone, asking people could he use their phone, making phone calls and getting in touch with random unknown numbers. They take note of it, the family does, and they go to SLED, essentially. Randy Murdoch does, and says, hey, here's a name, Curtis Eddie Smith. My brother's been calling him. And that sort of peels back the layers, and that gets the ball rolling a good bit. And I think from there, where we end up, we get Alec on the phone about a week after that, and he's just saying basically, I wasn't in my right mind. I didn't know what was going on. I can't really remember anything I said in all those phone calls, but I'm now able to think clearly. And he just almost sounded magnanimous, altruistic, if you wanted, like he just wanted to come clean.
Well, and he also said that he was desperate. Desperation. That's also what we heard a lot about, was how desperate Alec was. Afterwards, he just wanted Eddie to kill him, even though he wasn't paying him to kill him, but he was going to get Eddie to kill him, and he was going to have this life insurance policy for his son, Buster, that he was better. Everybody was better off if he just wasn't around anymore. So that's where he kind of landed with SLED a little bit. But let's listen to what they discovered when they went to Eddie's house. Basically, as soon as Randy calls him and says, hey, we're getting multiple calls from an unknown number on Alec's phone, or that, you know, Alec's trying to make calls to that it's Eddie Smith, they go to Eddie Smith's house, and guess what they find? Let's see if the clip tells us.
And was there any sort of notebook with a ledger in it or anything like that?
Yes, there was also a small spiral notebook, a 3.5-inch spiral notebook that had various, it looked like, obviously it wasn't completed by an accountant, but there was numbers and there was pills and descriptions of it looks like some type of sales ledger. Mr. Smith lives in a modest house, has a modest vehicle. When we're seeing several $100,000 of deposits and financial records for Mr. Smith's Enterprise Bank, we obtained a search warrant. Through the execution of that search warrant, the funds were tied back to checks written by Mr. Murdoch.
So, Charlie, my first question out of this is, yes, it sounds like Eddie is definitely the way the state's setting it up, that he could well be his alleged drug dealer, the way they're setting it up. You know, they're saying that he's finding all of those things that look like he's having transactions. Mm-hmm. What does this have to do with the double murder?
Well, one thing that did strike me in the recorded interview, remember the interview that Attorney Griffin mm-hmm. and Hart Pootlian set up with the SLED agents when he's in the rehab facility, what I thought was very harmful, really, to the defendant's position, was that they then asked him at the end, is Buster in any danger because you hadn't paid the drug dealer? And he was very clear, as I recall, saying, I've paid everybody, and I'm not worried, in effect, of him being in danger. So to set up Eddie Smith or somebody else or the Cowboys or some drug organization as the possible shooter, I thought the trail of evidence, again, without Eddie testifying. I understand he would be a bad witness for the state because of so many inconsistent statements, and you'd put up a non-credible person. You could cross-examine him effectively probably for a day or at least a half day. They've gotten past that with all these recordings, which I know they didn't want in. You could tell there was an effort this morning. I guess we should say that too. After Judge, the way Judge Newman ruled, that was actually a response to a very strong effort. I thought it was sort of a good stand at the Alamo there for Jim Griffith. He actually got the court's transcript, read him mm-hmm. up to the judge, had an impassioned argument. Judge Newman, as I understood it, pointed out, well, you left out a couple of phrases there. Mm-hmm. And so he overruled the defense. So now you had this flood of information in. And I think where we are, see what your thoughts on this, is it's not so much motive, it's not so much anything particular with this case other than we can exclude Eddie Smith as a suspect. We think you're going to go down that path in your case. You may go down other paths with drug information. But I keep coming back to they're not to consider any of this information for character or that he's likely to commit another crime. But there's so much darkness here. Mm. You almost get the... I just had the feeling hearing all this is like, what wouldn't he do? I mean, he's putting his family in this horrendous position where he fakes this. Whether it's, that's another issue. Was it a real attempt to be killed by Eddie Smith or was it a botched one? I mean, a purposely botched one to get more sympathy, to be thrown off the tracks. But you have this dark picture of this attorney who's stolen millions of dollars from innocent clients and his fellow law firm partners. He's hidden this drug addiction from so many people. And that appears to be really had a drug problem. And now after the killings of his wife and son, where you can see that he's not been forthright with law enforcement, mm-hmm. to say the least. And now after being confronted, that was the very day that Chris Wilson confronted him, right?
It was the same day.
Stealing the 190,000.
Well, the day of the roadside shooting, yes.
Yeah, 190,000. I don't know. Do you think Drew or Ann?
Well,
such darkness here.
My question is, there's a lot of darkness. Does this speak to the character that the jury's not allowed to touch?
I find him a hard time to they're
all
human.
This double life, this multiple sort of...
It kept creeping into my mind. Golly, this is the kind of person that might indeed kill his own son and wife, right? But
well,
you're not supposed to do that.
They certainly have kept on saying in testimony, so did you really know Alec Murdoch? Mm-hmm. Did you really know Alec Murdoch? And that speaks to what you're saying. I just wonder how much the jury's going to be instructed to not listen to that.
Yeah, they'll be instructed to be considered for these purposes only. But I'm just saying
hard.
I was struck by the amount of information there that was very negative about the defendant.
Yeah.
I still think there's ground. I still think there's ground to plow for the state specifically to potentially address the idea, one that you just casually floated out there, Charlie, is was it a real attempted mm-hmm. suicide, attempted assisted mm-hmm. suicide, or was it, or did Eddie deliberately miss?
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
To your point about character, before this and always have been taking in the full picture of everything that happened, I've always been a little bit inclined to think that maybe that wasn't such a botched accidental suicide as it was a very well executed appearance of a botched suicide. But both, I'm open to both possibilities. Taking a step back though, I think bigger picture, again, the jury's not supposed to take this into character evidence account. Bigger picture, I think the state today effectively, we have to wait for cross-examination. Obviously, we have to hear the defense's side of things. And again, to my own point about there being still being a little bit of ground to plow with it, I think mm-hmm. on the state side. All that said, I think the state pretty well put to bed this whole Eddie Smith Cowboys gang thing today. And they made it clear at the end of testimony with Ryan Kelly from SLED. They think no one else was involved. And that's what this really all dates back or calls back to, is the two shooter theory or the multiple shooter theory, or what we've discussed so much earlier on in the trial was, could somebody else have been involved? Like, there's no way he could have done all this by himself. Mm-hmm. I think we're honing in now on, nope, it was Alec.
That's
and it was
what...
only Alec. And there's a point I want to call back to yesterday when Jim Griffin was launching into this line of questioning. And you guys didn't look at these drug dealers who were under indictment, and you didn't look at Eddie Smith and did you track their cell phones? And David Owen said, no, in fact, we did. We did geofencing, and there were no other phones out there. The only other phones out there that night besides the families were first responders. There was nobody else out there, at least not with a phone on them.
Well, but I'm going to just interject there. You did hear them say, yes, but what about the burner phones? They never use cell phones. Mm-hmm. They use burner phones. So I heard that interjected a little bit.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
gang members or like they would know for sure. They wouldn't know for sure, right? But that was one thing I did hear.
Perhaps I misinterpreted that, but I took it to mean that they did basically a reverse. They look for any cell phone signals out there. And maybe, again, I could be completely wrong. Someone is watching along, listening along in the comments, if you have some insight on that. But my interpretation of it was they scanned for any cell phone readings in the general area, and they found none.
Yeah.
If I'm right and what we hear today is right, they think there's absolutely no evidence anyone else was involved and they're putting this to bed. But we have to see how the state...
I think there's... hour and a half to me. I thought, that's a lot of questioning, right?
Max, did you have a question for us?
Yeah, yes. Somebody in the comment section asked if Alex Murdaugh was Eddie's biggest client, why would he kill him?
Well, I don't think that. I think Eddie and I don't know. Okay. Oh gosh, I'm going to start speculating here as a journalist. This is dangerous ground.
There's so many
here.
Things that you could talk about, right? Because one thing, the testimony from Alex was it was just a very impromptu. Please kill me.
Right.
It was like within a matter... Didn't he say like a half an hour earlier?
Yeah.
He called him up and gave him a gun, and they go down there with this...
Yeah.
I found that really shocking.
Yeah.
That he's... So I hate to keep going back to what I was thinking. Is just so much darkness here. Like, here's a person out there that would agree to kill somebody within a half hour's conversation, and they go down there presumably to do it or not to do it. It's just... And that's why I think where this trial has ended up is it's been at times, I think, a little confusing from the state standpoint, wouldn't you agree, on
absolutely.
Financial and this and that? But
yeah.
I will say that the completeness of the picture, there's not much missing, right, that we know about? It's all out in front of this jury.
We just need that. I know it happens in closing arguments. I understand they still have some time with the state. That's what I've said to these guys several times is I need to be led to water a little bit.
I think that's right.
And I really want to see exactly where they're coming from. Max, do you have something else for us?
Going back to Blanca's testimony when he asked about the insurance cards.
And
there's been this confusion of,
can you imagine? That would
did he have insurance or not? People have been wondering that as well.
That's a good point.
Well, are you talking about life insurance?
The health insurance card.
That's a good point. That would show that he wasn't planning to die because you wouldn't need your health insurance card for the morgue.
Right. But then they're talking about life insurance policies.
She requested his health insurance card for the hospital. That's a great pickup. So I would think the state would be thinking the same way too.
So at what point he called Blanca before this went down?
Yeah, right before.
Between Chris Wilson and
I'm going to the hospital.
Who calls
there? That's great.
You know, that reads so much into what he was thinking too. Absolutely. If they're pulling health insurance cards.
They did bring that on evidence.
Before the roadside.
So they must be onto that as well. That it was not a suicide.
And also
a botched.
Tinsley testimony, I guess he said, Alex didn't, when they looked into it, Alex didn't have any life insurance. So,
that's
the
also a
plot that he said, I'm going to leave for.
Funny, I left court that day with that same impression on the testimony. I was further clarified that no, it was meant that he spoke maybe a bit broadly, that in fact there was life insurance on Alex, right?
Okay, yeah. That's the way I understood it. Mm-hmm. There was no life insurance policies on
everyone
Maggie
else.
And Paul, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But it was that they still had mm-hmm. one on Alex. Mm-hmm. So I think that clears that part of it mm-hmm. up a little bit. Did we have any more clips that we wanted to play, Max?
Yeah, just when they went into Eddie's house.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Bite clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Course of the 911 call, the ambulance, and multiple interviews at the hospital, that Alec Murdoch ever mention or identify Curtis Edward Smith at all until his lies about the side of the road were exposed?
No.
Did Alec Murdoch ever say that there was any risk or threat to Buster?
He said no. He did not. He actually denied it when we asked.
Did Alec Murdoch say that Curtis Eddie Smith had anything to do with the murders at Moselle?
He denied it when we asked.
And is there any evidence that Curtis Edward Smith had anything to do with Moselle?
None whatsoever.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they ended that testimony, correct?
Right. And by the way, I should mention, this may be too fine a point, but it's my understanding, I need to double check this, but that in South Carolina, there's a law that says that there's not an exclusion for paying out life insurance for suicide. Right. Somebody told me that someone who practices an era like Alex did wouldn't know that, so that his presumed motivation could be suspect.
Yeah, I think Dick Harpootlian even addressed that a little bit. Is like he was speculating on the call is with Sled that we overheard today. It's like, he apparently didn't know that there was a two year
exclusionary policy.
Yeah, after 2 years, you can commit suicide and you still get your payout.
I know, and then there's also, I have to say, because we just heard this about the suspect. Was Eddie Smith ever a suspect? Did they owe money to Eddie? Was Buster in danger? The other thing was the sketch, and I don't know who that sketch was supposedly of, but boy, was it specific. I mean, that was strange.
Kudos to that sketch artist, because that was immaculate.
I'm kind of like, who is that?
Who is it?
Nobody. It's a figment of Alec Murdoch's imagination. Somebody drew it out of thin air. Good for them.
Well, there's a lot of speculation going on all over social media right now about who he might have had in the back of his mind.
Right?
No? That is certainly one thing that there's been a lot of speculation out there, that maybe he was pointing some kind of finger toward a boat crash survivor or someone involved with it. So.
Connected to somebody.
So it's a good question for Alec Murdoch, but unfortunately we don't know if he's going to be taking the stand, so we're not quite sure if that's going to happen. I mean, I did want to circle back, because it was something that you had mentioned earlier about Ken Kinsey.
Oh, yeah, we need to talk about him a little bit.
I really think so. You know, Ken Kinsey took the stand. He's, they were ribbing him because he's got a lot of titles. He's a doctor. He's a professor. He's the chief deputy over at the Orangeburg County. But what Ken Kinsey did for the state was to set up what, Charlie?
He set up, I thought, brilliantly, and he was very folksy, but he really connected with these jurors, one of the best expert witnesses from a persuasive standpoint. So I do believe they were accepting what he was saying, which is basically, to capsulize it, was that Paul Murdoch was in that small room, was shot first at a certain angle and a certain head orient. He went through everything. Mm-hmm. Actually, I thought he did so much better in explaining versus the forensic pathologist. Because she said she's not a crime scene person, but she put it all together, the shotgun pellets to the window, and then the second shot. But to capsulize this, and then the angles had to be from a shooter that would be shooting relatively low. But I think where we're headed with this, and I'd be surprised if I'm wrong on this, or you have this expert, he's a folksy, sort of a local grown.
Yeah, I mean, born and bred. Orangeburg. He's like, I'm from really far away. I'm from Orangeburg, which anybody that knows this area, how far away is Orangeburg?
Orangeburg and Colleton County share a border.
Yeah.
How endearing.
It's right around the corner.
How endearing. So I suspect the defense will be, in fact, they're talking about flying in people. Mm-hmm. And I suspect there's going to be an expert witness that will challenge what he just told this jury, that no, it had to be two people shooting at Paul, not just one possible. He didn't say for sure one person did it, but he made it very plausible for one person to have been able to do it. I think that's a fair statement. So see where that goes. But I know this, that right now those jurors are very comfortable with what that expert told them.
You know, the most crazy thing to me today was, what, number one, watching Dick Harpootlian drag poor Phil Barber up there and use him as a mannequin to demonstrate. How was I holding the gun, or how could he been? And
with a shotgun,
with a real shotgun, by the way.
Yeah.
And I don't care if it's unloaded. I don't care if it's you don't do that. But one thing is abundantly clear about Dick Harpootlian and his courtroom etiquette and tactics are a bit brazen, and he'll make you uncomfortable in there. I don't know if that's by design. So much. Of course, it's by design. Anyway, but my point is that they go through all of this, and the glaring thing to me that they just overlooked is, how do you explain? Max, I don't know if you can pull up the photo or if you have it, but I know it's on my Twitter. But essentially, this Ken Kinsey comes up with what he believes was the angle of the final shot that killed Paul. And it shows a little cone of trajectory about where the muzzle of the gun barrel would have been located, mm-hmm. and the trajectory upward that the shot path took. And for all his antics and demonstrative what have you up there and speculating on where, how was the gun held and how could it be that the gun was at such a low angle, both the state and the defense ignored the most obvious solution to me, which was that somebody had just simply kneeled down and was kneeling and aiming up, or that they could have been, I don't know.
Holding just, the gun.
That's very good.
Yeah.
But don't you think the jurors, I mean, we've got some really, look to me like, I think we have a lot of hunters out there that use weapons and are used to, mm-hmm. what do you think?
So yeah.
I'm thinking they'll go where you are at some point during the deliberations.
It's about the only thing that really makes a lot of sense. I have some questions and thoughts on some of the things. I think it's more plausible. Dick Harpootlian kind of slipped in under his breath when he was using that full-sized, long-barreled 12-gauge shotgun, that he just sort of slipped in unchallenged, that he felt it was the state's theory that a gun very similar to that was used in the shooting. And as we've heard, a gun very similar to that is missing. It's more plausible to me. All of it makes more sense to me if it was not a long-barreled shotgun, but a short-barreled shotgun. Mm-hmm. Whatever. That's just one dude speculating.
But we don't know, and we won't know, will
yeah,
we?
Yeah, I mean, unless they don't have the murder
somehow
weapon.
The murder weapon shows up between now and next week, we're not going to have.
Of course, in this case, that's possible, right?
Well, and you know, and I totally agree with you. I mean, Drew's been around, you know, hunting your whole life.
Right.
I'm a city girl and have not been hunting my whole life. And, you know, to have that gun right there was a little. I don't know if the jurors felt it as much because he wasn't pointing it in that direction, but it was brazen. That's the only thing I can say, is to have a shotgun pointed in any direction in a courtroom is quite strong commentary, I think. And it was funny because it was extraordinary to see that taking place, because the family, of course, is right there, mm-hmm. and you're thinking, at some point, are they going to pull Alec Murdoch up there and say, "Hey, show us how a man who's that tall.
The exact same thought. And does Dick Harpootlian have the stones to put Alec Murdoch up there in front of that jury with a gun in his hand?
It's the OJ moment. It's the OJ moment, saying that he's too tall, he's too big. There's no way that a man that tall and big could ever get down there and shoot from that angle. We may still see it.
And he laid the groundwork for it today, because he says, Dick said, "I'm about the same height as Paul." Y'all, if we see that, my head's going to explode. But
yeah,
hopefully we will not. I think that is beyond all bounds of good taste. But that's just me opining on something that's really, I'm just here to be an objective observer of. I think, though, however, it leads into we're probably going to see more on that, and what the theory of more artful overlooking of that clear possibility that I put out there about the shooter just kneeled down, whoever it may have been. Dick artfully overlooking that and then trying to bring in that outside expert, to your point, of trying to make up a story about to explain that, oh, because of the shell casings here, because he keeps hammering that point. He keeps trying to go back to that, saying there's, it looks like the there had to have been more than one shooter just because of the shell casings. And
So we'll see.
That's right.
Experts. Well, you know, we've got a cross examination tomorrow with Dick Harpulian, with Alec Murdoch's team. They're going to be crossing. Will it be Dick crossing tomorrow?
Oh, clearly. And he's, as I said, he talked about hour and a half.
Okay, so Dick's going to be crossing tomorrow. Dick Harpulian's going to be crossing tomorrow on SLED agent Ryan Kelly. I think it's fascinating because Harpulian and Griffin are both in that telephone conversation that they had, that interview with SLED. Not only that, it very much felt like Harpulian was...
he's kind of a witness. You're right. That's an excellent legal point.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I think Harpulian is interesting
because... he's going to be able to say, well, you were there, Mr. Harpulian, and you... then they come up. And I bet Judge Zimmerman will have some wise words.
Think he will, too, because that's a tricky thing. I mean, you felt like you were sitting there in real time... listening to this conversation. We've got the players in front of us. Kelly, Harpulian, Alec, Griffin. They're all right there, and we're listening to it in real time as this goes. So I don't know how Dick cross-examines himself.
Yeah. What's the precedent for that, Charlie?
We can't do it. But I think he'll probably stay away from that whole interview, wouldn't you think, because he's on it. And I think he's going to get him on what they didn't do. That seems a big theme. Which has been effective to agree that there's things they could have done better or didn't do altogether. Use him as a sounding board off of that. And I've got to think he's not going to like the exclusion, not necessarily of Eddie Smith, but of other suspects. There are other people that could have done it.
Well, I would, before we go, if everybody's finished on for today, I just want to say thank you so much to the Historical Society in Walterboro. I got one of the wonderful ladies who donated this sofa and the chair and helped put together this set. Absolutely. Thoughtful. I just want to say, if you're listening tonight, thank you so much for donating a few things here to keep us comfortable here in Walterboro as we carry on covering this story.
Shout out to Sarah Miller with the Colleton County Historical and Preservation Society, CHAPS. Hashtag team awesome. I know I'm not especially a member, but again, thank you so much. We have been able to exist and survive here in Walterboro for the last month now because they were so gracious to provide us a place to stay at a reasonable cost for what we're getting. And it's a great, great, great asset to us, and it's been a great deal for us, and we thank them so much.
Yeah, everybody at CIV says thank you, and at Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdoch Murders, Money, and Mystery. I hope that you're going to stay with us tomorrow. We are going to be back on air. Oh, hold on. Max has got something for me right now.
Just one quick question for Charlie. From a prosecutor standpoint, if Alex takes that stand, what would be your thoughts?
We have not enough time to talk about it. That's why I don't think he will take the stand. I think that it's just way, the risk reward is. But one thing I will say, he's a former prosecutor. He's a trial lawyer. And just watching him in court, he appears to have a really strong personality, would you say?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So he himself may say, I want to get up there and win this case for myself. So
he's got a huge personality, and I am watching him very closely today. He obviously did not want, in my mind, the way I read his body language, he did not want that roadside shooting in.
Right, right.
And that looked like a very uncomfortable situation between the three of them.
Right.
When I replayed that clip that was on this podcast. Yeah. If you go back and look at that, you'll see what I mean. He is stone-faced. Griffin's kind of sitting there going, it looks like it's coming in. And boy, that was tough to see. So,
But short answer would be inconsistencies, because you got the dog kennel video. So the short answer would be the inconsistency, but I would start with that. And it would be a day of cross-examination at least.
Incredible. Well, we will be back with you tomorrow. Thank you so much, everyone. And we'll have much more for you as we wrap out this week four. We'll be on day 20 tomorrow. See you then.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.